The idea of self-giving and self-sacrifice doesn't make a lot of sense these days in a society when most people are brought up with the aim of protecting their own interests and to looking after number one. Whether we're talking about giving up some of our time to help out as a volunteer somewhere or giving someone some of our cash to help a hard-up charity, the first thing we find ourselves asking is, what's in it for me? That seems to be how people are these days. Our default position is to put ourselves first and others second. And for some people, the idea of self-giving and self-sacrifice seem almost incomprehensible. Why would anyone deliberately choose the difficult or costly path if they could possibly avoid it? Well, on the war memorial in our churchyard are inscribed the names of 70 men from this village. We call it the Roll of Honour, or the List of the Fallen. We'll read those names out before our 2 minute silence this morning. 54 names from the First World War, 16 names from the Second World War. Every name, the story of a life. A son or a brother, a dad or an uncle. Every name is something else in common, a life given. A life given in self-sacrifice in service to our country. Names like Wilfred Bailey of the Royal Navy, lost with the sinking of HMS Hunter in the waters off Norway on the 10th of April 1940. Names like Clarence Hopkins of the Royal Armoured Corps. He was killed in the Burma campaign. He was 28 years old when he died on the 15th of March 1945. During our time together this morning, we come here to remember these people before God, and we come here to pay tribute to the lost with a deep sense of gratitude. We come to acknowledge once more the cost of war paid for in the lives and the deaths of those 70 local men who went to war and paid the ultimate price. Well, here in the Bible this morning, we find the very same issue before us. Why is it that self-sacrifice seems so foolish to some and yet makes perfect sense to others? If you're visiting today, you'll find out that we're partway through looking at one of the letters in the Bible, a letter that we call 1 Corinthians. It's in the New Testament part of the Bible on page 1144. The letter was written by the Apostle Paul to the church in Corinth. As we were hearing last week, it was a church that had been planted and was led for the first 18 months of its existence by that same apostle. But now, a few years on, it's got into a bit of a mess. Splits and factions have developed as people have been selfishly choosing which leader they prefer, which one they like the best. Paul sees that as a serious problem. A symptom, he says, of a much deeper culture of self-centeredness, not only in society, but in and amongst the members of the church. So he writes his letter in order to bring the matter out into the open and to begin to sort it out. And the way he wants to sort out a culture of self-centeredness is to bring the people back to Jesus, to look again at Jesus, to consider him, to remember him, both in his life, but even more in his sacrificial death on the cross. You see, the Lord Jesus and the fallen of Kilness, they have that much in common. Their lives were given in self-sacrifice, so that others may go free. So Paul is writing his letter into a culture that in many ways is very similar to our own. Corinth was a cosmopolitan city where all tastes and all preferences were catered for. There was a multitude of religion on offer. You could choose to visit any number of temples and gods. And there was also a multitude of feasts and entertainments. Again, you could choose from the good, clean family fun to the downright immoral. All was here in the city of Corinth. And it was in one of those places that likes to impress, the religious leaders, they liked to impress. They were really big into showy ritual and pious traditions. The philosophers there, they liked to impress by their clever speeches and their eloquent philosophy. And then along comes Paul, and he plants a church right there in the middle of it all. He brings the Christian faith into the mix, the faith about Jesus Christ. And this new church, this new faith, it's completely different from anything that's there already or anything that's gone before. It's the kind of thing that on one of those tick box surveys, you'd choose the one at the bottom of the list that says none of the above. The Christian faith stood out from the rest because it was so different. It wasn't about the ritual or tradition. It certainly wasn't some new fancy philosophy. And that was because this faith was about a man. It was centred about the true story of the person of Jesus Christ, who claimed to have been sent by his Father. He was sent into a lost and hurting world in order to save people from their sins. And he did that. He achieved that through giving up his life unto death on a cross. And according to Paul, it's a message that many people found difficult to believe and hard to understand. Look with me there at verse 18. For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved it is the power of God. The cross of Jesus, to some utter foolishness, to others the power of God to save. Paul splits the world into two distinct camps here. Do you see, putting it simply, those who get it and those who don't? For many people, the cross seems incomprehensible. It's just a nonsense. How can a fallen, crucified king be good news for people? And yet for others, it makes perfect sense. The war against sin and death carried a high price indeed. And Jesus leads the charge. He carries the can. He gives his own life so that mine can be saved. Well, through the rest of this section, Paul is holding out the truth about Jesus to the prevailing culture. He's helping us to see why some people don't get it, while others are so utterly convinced. But in this first bit of the letter, Paul explains why the world rejects the cross-shaped gospel of Jesus. Let me read it for us again from verse 20. Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age? Has God not made the foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not know him, God was pleased through the foolishness of what was preached to save those who believe. Jews demand miraculous signs and Greeks looked for wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews, and foolishness to Gentiles, but to those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. Now, as we've said to many people, the Christian message seems both weak and foolish, but see what Paul is saying. It's the person who accepts the message of the cross that's the wise person. And that's because the cross of Jesus can do something that pious religion and eloquent philosophy could and can never do. It can save those who believe. The cross is a place of refuge, a place of strength, a very present help against the eternal problems of sin and of death. Before I became a vicar, I used to live near Brentwood in Essex, and just up the road from there is a secret nuclear bunker. It was originally built in 1952 and designed to house up to 600 military and civilian personnel, possibly even the Prime Minister. Their collective task being to organise the survival of the population in the awful aftermath of a nuclear war. But deep down in the ground, built over three floors with great big thick reinforced concrete walls, it was kitted out with at least 3 months' supplies of food and water once the 600 occupants were safely shut in there inside. And now, I guess to some people, the secret bunker might have looked a bit fanciful, like a drop in the ocean saving just 600 people, whilst not able to help millions of others from the southeast of England stuck outside on the surface. Yet other people thought very differently. To them, it was vital and strategic, a strategic defence, the only safe place to be if the very worst happened. These days, with that immediate threat gone away, the bunker is now open to the public, a fascinating place that we were able to visit a couple of times when we lived nearby. So the safe place of the secret bunker is now an open secret. It's got its own website and Wikipedia article. You can even follow it on Facebook, should you choose to do so. Well, back in Corinth, Paul was saying very much the same thing, that believing in the message of Jesus is the only safe place in the war against sin and death. And that message, whilst once known only to the apostles, is now an open secret with all those that God is calling. We preach Christ crucified, says Paul, the wisdom of God and the power of God. A bit like my visit to the secret bunker. In order to get the benefits, you've got to go right down inside. You've got to hide yourself away. No point looking on from the car park, because, well, that won't protect you at all, will it? What does that mean in terms of our faith? Well, it's about accepting the simple message of the cross and becoming a follower of Jesus, even if at one level it does seem weak and foolish. And if we're already going on with Jesus, it's about remembering what saved us, keeping the cross front and central, and resisting the temptation to move on from the cross to something, I don't know, a bit more eloquent or sophisticated or complicated. The world at large doesn't understand Jesus, so it rejects the message of the cross. But don't give up, says Paul. Keep on sharing what you know, so that others may come to know it too. Now, compared to the showy religion and the pious tradition of the religious people, Paul's message wasn't at all impressive, was it? Compared to the eloquent philosophies of the day, his message must have seemed weak and rather pathetic. But looking ahead just a little bit, he says in verse 2 of the next chapter, I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. Not persuasive words or worldly wisdom, but a simple message from a wise God about the Son who gave his own life so that others could go free. Jesus showed us an incredible act of love and self-sacrifice, and he put into words that idea when he said, greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. And just like Paul says, many just won't get it. Lots of people won't understand. Self-sacrifice has gone so far out of fashion that to many people it just seems like a nonsense. But for those with faith to believe, it's really not a nonsense. We see it in times of war. We see it at the cross. Self-sacrifice is indeed a high calling when it achieves such a greater purpose, the purpose of securing peace and freedom for others. That was a calling that Wilfrid Bailey knew. He knew that sacrifice. Clarence Hopkins, he knew that sacrifice. And Jesus too. He knew the sacrifice of laying down one's life so that others may go free. This simple message of the cross of Jesus is one that we hold very dear to in this church. It's the message that we preach and we teach, if you like, with Paul. We want to know nothing except Jesus Christ and him crucified. The reason that we hold to a message that the world at large might think of as weak and foolish, well, at the end of the day, it's because it's the only thing that can save us in the war against sin and death. The message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those who are being saved, it is the power of God, both in this world and in the world to come. So look, please don't buy into the philosophy that says self-giving and self-sacrifice are a foolish waste of time. The fallen of Kilnest and he who fell on the cross of Calvary really have shown us otherwise. Let us pray together.